Arithmetics diagram. Types of chalklings. Lines of making continue to be the least quantifiable of the arithmetic lines. It appears that the type of chalkling drawn affects its ability to follow instructions. For instance, a chalkling shaped like a knight is generally stronger when bound to a defensive point than when it is sent to attack. A chalkling with large claws or teeth is good for attacking, but weak at defense. Large, bloated chalklings can take more hits from a line of vigor, but are slow to move. Chalklings with lots of legs can move quickly, but often can't chew through enemy lines as quickly. Chapter 19. Joel sat in the broad cathedral hall, arms resting on the back of the pew in front of him, head resting on his arms, thoughts refusing to rest at all. "The Master gave life to the lifeless," Father Stewart proclaimed, droning on at his lecture. "We are the lifeless now, needing his atoning grace to restore light and life to us." Light shone through the stained-glass windows, which were each set with a clock that ticked away the time. The main window, a brilliant blue circular one, was inset with the most magnificent clock on the island, the gears and spindles themselves formed of stained glass. The pews filled the nave of the cathedral, with a single aisle running down the center. Above them, in the reaches of the domed cathedral interior, statues of 12 apostles watched over the crowd of devout. The statues moved occasionally, their internal clockwork mechanisms giving them a semblance of life. Life from the lifeless. "The bread of life," Father Stewart said, "the water of life, the power of the resurrection." Joel had heard it all before. Priests, he had long since noted, had a distinct tendency to repeat themselves. This day, Joel was finding it even more difficult than usual to pay attention. It seemed strange to him, even unsettling, that his life should have intersected so keenly with the important developments at Armedius. Was it fate that had placed Joel where he was? Was it instead the will of the Master, as Father Stewart spoke of so often? He looked up at the stained-glass windows again. What would it mean for the church if public opinion turned against the arithmetists? Several of the windows depicted King Gregory, the monarch in exile. He was always surrounded by arithmetic drawings. Cut into the stonework of the walls were interlocking patterns of circles and lines. While the building itself had the shape of a cross, the center where the cathedral arms met was circular, set with pillars marking the points on a 9-point circle. Apostles watched, and the Master himself was symbolized on the rood. A statue of Saint Da Vinci drew circles, gears, and arithmetic triangles before itself on the ground. He had been canonized and adopted into the monarchical church, even though, or perhaps because, he had been a rebel Christian. Even the most oblivious of men knew of the connection between arithmetics and the monarchical church. No man gained arithmetic powers without first agreeing to be incepted. They didn't have to stay faithful, in fact they didn't even have to profess belief. They simply had to agree to be incepted, thereby taking the first step towards salvation. Muslims called arithmetics blasphemy. Other Christian churches grudgingly accepted the necessity of the ceremony, but then disputed that it proved the monarchical church's authority. The Joseon people ignored the religious side of the experience, remaining Buddhist despite their inceptions. However, no man could deny that without the monarchical church, there would be no arithmetics. That simple fact allowed the church, once on the brink of extinction, to eventually become the most powerful in the world. Would the church stand up for the arithmetists if the public tried to bring them down? Joel's mother sat next to him, listening devoutly to the sermon. She and Joel had spent the previous day moving back down into the workroom. It hadn't taken very long. They didn't own much. Every time Joel stepped into the workroom, though, he felt as if he were 8 years too old and about 2 feet too tall. Something poked Joel in the back of the neck. He started, then turned around, surprised to find Melody sitting on the bench behind him. She'd been on the other side of the building when he'd last seen her.
"He's almost done," she hissed. "You going to ask him, or should I?"
Joel shrugged noncommittally. A few moments later, she slid onto the bench beside him.
"What's up with you?" she asked quietly. "I thought this was everything you ever wanted."
"It is," he whispered.
"You don't sound like it. You've been dragging your feet ever since I told you my plan. You act like you don't want to be incepted."
"I do. I just..." How could he explain? "It's stupid, Melody, but I'm worried. For so long I've defined myself by the fact that I missed the opportunity to become an arithmetist. Don't you see? If this works, but I'm still not chosen, I won't have that to fall back on anymore."
Joel had studied, learning the patterns and defenses, following in the footsteps of his father. But all the while, he'd been able to feel secure in the knowledge that he wasn't a failure or a reject. He'd simply missed his chance, and for a good reason. Joel hadn't destroyed his father's hopes for an arithmetist child. Joel couldn't be blamed if he hadn't had an opportunity, could he?
"You're right. That is silly," Melody said.
"I'll go through with it," Joel replied. It makes me feel sick, that's all." Logically, he saw problems in that reasoning. One couldn't be blamed for not being an arithmetist. Still, logic didn't always change the way a person felt. He'd almost rather be left with the possibility that he could have been an arithmetist than find out for certain. Melody's insistence that he try again dug up all of the old fears. Father Stewart finished his preaching. Joel bowed his head for the ritual prayer. He didn't hear much of what Stewart said. By the time the Amen was spoken, however, he'd made up his mind. If there was a chance for him to become an arithmetist, he was not going to lose it. Not again. He shoved down his nervousness and stood up.
"Joel?"
his mother asked.
"Just a second, Mom," he said. "I want to talk to the vicar."
He rushed away, Melody quickly joining him.
"I will do it," Joel said. "You don't need to."
"Excellent," Melody said, for once not wearing her school uniform. Instead, she wore a white dress that was quite fetching. It came down to her knees, showing off quite a bit of leg.
"Focus," Joel thought.
"I still don't think this will work."
"Don't be so pessimistic," she said, eyes twinkling. "I've got a few tricks planned."
Oh, dear, Joel thought.